Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Overlap. We promise this is not the fourth time that we were trying to record this in the span of this evening. Welcome back. It is always great to have you with us. Thank you, as always, for listening. I'm, of course, joined by Rian. Rian, I usually ask you about your day. I usually ask you about your week, and I've already heard about it three times. Our lovely viewers, you know what? Let me catch them up to speed to make it really simple for everybody. Rian has a lot of travel planned for the end of the year. I may or may not be at fault for that. I may or may not have asked Rian if he wanted to potentially go on a soccer-themed trip to the Euros or the Paris Olympics, to which Rian promptly shut me down. I have been having a lovely week. It is good to talk about our topic today, which we'll get to in a second, as prepared by Rian. And I tried to do that all in 60 seconds because we were supposed to start recording 40 minutes ago. And here we are. So, all right,
That was great.
Rian.
Well done. That's
I tried.
an abridged version of my life
Look.
and
There are so many, there are only so many times where I can listen to myself do an intro. I love hearing about your life and I love hearing about other people's lives. It genuinely gives me energy, but I cannot do this intro seven times. So we are speeding through it. We are going to go straight to the topic at hand, Rian, which I will just briefly tease, is really the difference between club football and international football. But more specifically, why do those players potentially play differently in a club setting versus an international football setting? There's a lot, of course, to be said about it. I've got my five different points that I told Rian about before we started recording. Honestly, we probably don't talk about them like take two. I forget. I don't even know at this point. But Rian, tell us more about the topic. Tell us a little bit more about why you picked it.
Yeah, I think, well, as we have like these couple weeks between and during the international breaks, it gives a good time for people to just kind of, well, half the time people the discourse on at least on Twitter around soccer during that time just gets you get people get bored and start talking about things that are really just not important almost at all, and you get more player debates and discussions about aura and whatnot. And so one of the things that I was thinking about, because usually my international breaks are, I genuinely stop thinking about like the club, like Chelsea in general.
It's soothing, isn't
It's easier to do it recently, of course, but like but I mean, actually, it was much easier to do it last season. Like,
Oh, of
really, it was
course.
much easier to do it last season.
It was
But
enjoyable last season.
yeah. But because I am a pretty a pretty dedicated follower of the U.S. national teams, and especially with the men playing during these last couple of weeks, this also becomes a time when I have to see the same discourse around the men's team and the coach, and that honestly gets possibly more tiring than a lot of the club football discourse. But yeah, it
Well, hold on,
makes
just
me,
really quickly before we go any further, tell me a little bit about why you're irritated in not so many words by the discourse around Greg Berhalter, and then we can talk about certainly the rest of the international kind of apparatus.
Yeah, I mean, I think honestly, during this conversation, we're probably gonna end up talking about. I'm
We
gonna end
will.
up like we're gonna end up relating things to the, at least for me, I'm gonna end up relating things to the U.S. men's national team, because that's the one I follow the most. But I guess like the discourse around Berhalter specifically, I've said this in the past, and I think we even talked about this after the World Cup. That it kind of got to the point for me where it's like maybe not necessarily it doesn't matter, but to the point of it doesn't matter enough. It's for the effort that goes into trying to talk about like him as a coach in general is not worth like the actual influence that any national team coach has on what happens on the field, I should say. And I gave my reasons in the past where I thought like, off the field he's done a very good job. The team obviously loves to play, like, has a camaraderie that that like reminds you of the older like U.S. men's national teams, which is great. And then they come out without being prompted talking about how much they enjoy the coach. And the thing that probably matters more at the international level than at the club level is just, do the players enjoy playing with each other, and do they enjoy the coach? And that's something that I think he's done a really good job with. And also, in being able to recruit the dual nationals that are very important pieces to the current team. And dual nationals in general are going to be important for the U.S., U.S. as a country, in general going forward. So anyway, that's why, like, most of the reason is he can't influence it that much. And ultimately, as we're going to talk about, we're definitely going to talk about, is, the players are what kind of matter the most anyway. When you're talking about just national teams where you don't get to transfer players, I mean, you not necessarily, you can in not as real way. Not in the same way, I should say.
Definitely not. That would be borderline illegal if that was the case. But, yeah. I digress. So you mentioned something interesting, right? You mentioned kind of a level of team chemistry, understanding maybe it's team culture and philosophy within a camp, right? As a potential reason why, if we just take the U.S. men's national team for a second, why the U.S. men's national team, those players have obviously now high quality players as it relates to previous, national teams. But even across Europe, right? Christian Pulisic is having one of his best seasons ever at Milan. Mm-hmm. And I guess whatever this thumbs up emoji is, we'll ignore it for now. But the point that I'm trying to make is one of the points that you're making about a coach potentially not mattering is also one of the points that I want to make about why players are sometimes different between their club teams and their national teams. And I think at a club level, it's very interesting because this argument can kind of go either way, in that at a club level, players train together every day. They foster what I would hope would be a pretty deep understanding of how each player moves, each, player's strengths and weaknesses. And, if you're a center back playing off of another center back, or you're a striker making runs off of passes in behind that wingers are making, or your deep line midfielders are making, those are all things that you would hope would lead to deeper chemistry quicker. But it sounds like what you're saying, kind of at a national team level, is maybe what's more important is, even though those teams might convene for shorter periods of time, Berhalter, for example, might have those players for a shorter period of time, it will take maybe longer over time for those players with differing styles to get together quickly, but they're still pretty effective at creating combinations, pretty joint performances, if the individual quality is high. And that's what I want to go back to. It's like, if the individual quality is high, the coach's responsibility at that point is to make sure the structure of that team just brings out the best of those important qualities. And I think of an example of sacrificing potential quality for just general team structure is Paulo Dybala for Argentina. And that, I think, is a pretty good example of, well, high quality player, which, great to have him behind someone like Messi, but at the same time, may not necessarily completely fit into the picture. And that's okay, because the vibes are great and they've won the World Cup. So just to draw a parallel, that's my understanding of what you're saying. And that's kind of how I was thinking about it too.
Yeah, you touched on a few different things.
Yeah. That. We call that a rant.
But like, as you were kind of talking, I was like looking at my notes, and you kind of touched on like I said, a few different topics. But I think just to go back to where you started, where around the players themselves not having a lot of time to be able to create those relationships, unless they've obviously played with each other at youth level or something like that, but not having the time to be able to come up with these like very sophisticated methods of playing, right? So I had that as like one of my main reasons why we'll see the we see those differences in how players play at the club or country level. There's only about four breaks in the during the club season, four international breaks, three in the first half of the year, and then you have one in the second half of the season. You're talking about players and teams that have about seven to eight days, and even less sometimes, depending on when players are actually flying out or how far they are away from the national team camp, right? Happening every 1 to 2 months on average, and then you can throw in the summer if there's a tournament or maybe there's a couple friendlies or something like that. All in, you're on average about 12 to 15 games a year.
Yeah.
Compared to, you know, 38 games, yeah, 38 plus game seasons. You know, so if you have someone playing the championship, they're with their that's 46 games just in the league itself. So it's just like a completely, that's one example of it being a completely different task, right? You have very little time to implement and practice any kind of more complex systems that you come that you could come up with. That's why you tend to see teams, national teams, just try to be very solid defensively, right? And whether that's with or without the ball, a lot of the critique that you'll see around, again, just the U.S. national team is how slow they might play and how they don't really, they're not like a very direct, quick attacking team, and people do lament this at times, and at times it's understandable, but it's been pretty clear that for Berhalter, he cares, one of the things he cares about is being very defensively solid, but also using possession as a way to defend, right? And we see that at the club level too. We see that more effectively at the club level because you have more time to practice that, right? But
exactly,
the idea is the same, is being solid defensively. And England fans have the same kind of feeling around Gareth Southgate and in England. And the thing is, ultimately, the most successful teams that we usually see make it to the final or make it to the semifinals are the teams who are like just very, very defensively solid. And a lot of their games are not super high scoring, right?
Right.
Even think about those France teams that made two straight World Cup finals. Didier Deschamps, not this cavalier attacking coach, right? Like, even when you have players at that level, like when you have a player pool at that level for France, you still see that team shy towards being more defensively solid, and it's easier to do when you have Kylian Mbappe, who's able to counter attack any team in the world. But the point stands, like, that is ultimately what wins at the national, at international level more often than not. It's pretty rare that we see a team that is like outstanding in attack win a tournament, right? Yeah. We can even go back to the Spanish teams in the, you know, late 2000s, early 2010s. A great example of a team that was like defensive possession, like just the reason you could not score. And you go back to 2010, like most of their games, I think, ended 1-0. In that tournament,
final against Germany, yeah, and even the final was like dreadful, yeah.
Yep. But they controlled those games because they just, you couldn't get the ball off of them, and that just all kind of brings it all back to like even possibly the best national like stretch of a national team we've ever seen was rooted in defense first, a different way, you know, defense with the ball, but either way, defense first.
So I feel like what you're getting at is that defensive-minded teams tend to do better at international tournaments. And I think the thing that I'm reading into a little bit is that the players that don't necessarily fit that style of play at a national level, right, with the team's chemistry of a national team, may not necessarily always see the pitch, if that's the case, even if they are high quality players that are capable of, you know, scoring several goals, right? I would argue, it's funny you bring up England, because I was thinking about Harry Kane as an example earlier, and what kind of role does he have at Bayern Munich / Tottenham in the past versus the English national team? I would argue they're very similar.
I think he
plays a very similar role, because I hate to use this phrase, his role is one dimensional, but that isn't a bad thing. That doesn't say he does it badly, or that's, you know, it's purely about output, is kind of my point. For a player like, you know, basically take most attacking or defensive midfielders in the world, they're likely to play two very different roles in the context of their club team and their national team. And you also have to think about just how tactics and club management versus international management kind of fit into all this. And why do I bring that up? Well, yes, a club manager has more time to develop players and assign specific, you know, roles and things like that, where international manager might not. But at the same time, I guess what I'm ultimately trying to say is that international managers don't cycle out as quickly as club managers. If you go on a poor run for, like you mentioned, those 10 to 12 games as an international manager, that might be the end of your tenure, maybe. Especially if you're like the, you know, one of the top teams in the world. But that 10 to 12 game span is like a year to a year and a half. A club manager going on a poor run for 10 to 12 games is maybe a month and a half to 2 months, right? And that's a very, very different timeline to be operating in. And the window of opportunity to impress or to very much let down people is very small. And so I just wanted to highlight that, in that, like, there are tactical differences and nuances, but there's also like a timeline aspect of this and how often people see these teams play. And that plays, I think, into the psyche of how people see international teams, international players versus their clubs.
Yeah. And actually, this was a point made on the podcast I was listening to today. The thing that also comes with the national team, when you have those whatever 12 games or so, is that also a lot of those games, the stakes are unbelievably higher than the normal club game as well, right? So that's why sometimes it almost feels like even more intense, the criticism, which is it's not realistic. It's just not realistic, right? That, you know, you basically have 12 games a season, likely 6 to maybe 10 of them are like knockout / like tournament style games. So the expectations are also weirdly disproportionate to any like singular game that happens at club level. It's just such a weird, we understand it because the games have higher stakes, but like, it's just such a weird thing to think about. I think that one of the other things that I wanted to touch on, and you kind of brought it up earlier too, it's kind of like the player quality as well. So the thing is pretty obvious. Like, there's no control over the player pool. Right, if you're the coach, or if you're the players themselves, you're limited to where you're eligible to play. You're limited based on, you know, things that you literally could not control, like where your parents raise you and stuff. But go on.
A Hunger Games style draft of players would be absurd to watch on an international stage, but that thought popped in my head.
Hunger Games.
Maybe not Hunger Games. Just a lottery system. Anyway, just go on.
Wow, interesting. I'm not even sure I want to know how the mechanics of that is supposed to work.
It's gonna be okay. Do you remember those that old Samsung ad from like 10 years ago where it was like the aliens and the predators versus Messi and Ronaldo playing on?
Okay.
What? Yeah, like they had to pick people. Like, it's fine. I'm in the water. Let's just go on.
Anyway, so you don't have any control over the players at your disposal, right? Sometimes you're lucky and you're either born in France or your parents immigrated to France, and hey, you're Paul Pogba and your club love, your club team is terribly set up for you to play. You have, and your club team thinks that you're a defensive mid and keep throwing these random midfielders that don't compliment you at all play. And sometimes you get to come through the French national team and you have a guy like N'Golo Kanté play next to you, who's the perfect foil. And it's just luck, and it allows you to be a completely different player, right? And he's like one of those guys I think that a lot of people might point to as someone who, at least, well, like I said, at least since his move from Juventus to Manchester United, has always looked better at international level than club, right? But from the coaching point of view, you're very, like I said, you're very limited of the players you can try to pick. That's where you could end up having these like disproportionate areas of strength where you might have like four good left backs, four like high level left backs, and they're also like some of your best players. So you have to find a way to put them all into the team. I think that was something with Scotland recently where they had Andrew Robertson and then also Kieran Tierney when he was I think he is playing a bit more now on loan though. But anyway, like they had to shift either Tierney or Robertson into the center back because you can't not have both of those players on if they're like you're part of like your four or five best players, right? So that becomes a very limiting thing, and it leads those teams to also rely on the top talents a lot more, right? So that's where going back to the U.S. national team, right? Someone like Christian Pulisic, who is a very good player for, you know, at the European level, right? But he's never been the best player on any of the teams that he's been on, or even relied upon as like one of the two or three best players in the team, right? At the U.S. level, he is relied upon as that type of player, right? And he is going to get on the ball a lot more, probably be given more, he is given more freedom to move around the pitch, right? And in general, he's attempting more of those passes in the final third. And at times I think a little less now in his career as he's gotten older, he picks his spots with dribbling now, which happens to pretty much all wingers as they get older, but he's just one example of a guy who is relied upon a lot more at club level. At international level. So you'll see very different performances from him than you'll see at Milan, where he's having, as you said, a great season in terms of like goals and assists. But a lot of that is because of his really good work off the ball. Like that is one of his best qualities. And he has capitalized in a lot of situations for Milan from that point of view. Whereas that happens a little less at the U.S.
Makes a lot of sense. And what I like about what you pointed out is it doesn't contradict with your very first point, which your very first point was it's all, or if not all, but it's largely about the talent of players over what the coach really of a national team would tell players on a, you know, 10 game basis per year and what he or she can get out of them in those 10 games, right? That example almost is really good evidence of why a player of extreme talent needs to be put in an opportunity or put in a situation to actually take advantage of whether it's a certain space on the field or a certain position, whatever it might be. That is what the coach's responsibility is. But to your point, he or she can't get like a lottery of players to pick from and go select them. They are brought to that person, and ultimately they're obviously scouted, but they're scouted from a very, very small subset of players, right? There's a very, very small subset of players that make it to this level. This is like the 1% of the 1%, right? So I completely agree with that. The interesting thing about kind of like I guess there's also like a psychological factor to playing for your club playing for your country versus your club. I don't know if this is something that you thought about, but something I was thinking about was the potential pressure of playing for your country versus playing for your club. And it's not to say that players are not motivated to play for their clubs. Like, they have to be intrinsically motivated based on their contracts, their families being based in those cities or wherever they might be.
It's a competitive spirit, to even make it to that, to make it to the professional level, you have to care.
100%.
You have to have that kind of fight spirit within yourself.
Absolutely. Make it to that level. I think the thing that I want to mention just as it relates to psychological pieces of playing for country versus club is that I think of a club like Brazil, and I think of the rich heritage that some of these really, really strong nations on the international level have. And I sometimes wonder if that pressure can really, really eat away at a player, especially over time, because if you think about it, no country is going to win the World Cup every 4 years. It's not ever going to happen that way because of the nature of talent and how things cycle and et cetera, et cetera. But every 4 years, I don't know if you're watching on Spotify on videos, I don't know what this thumbs up keeps popping up on my thing. But anyway, every 4 years, there's like a select group of maybe 5 to 7 nations that always feel that they have the best chance to win the World Cup. And I don't get it. I don't get it because Brazil, when was the last time Brazil won the World Cup? 2002?
Yeah.
Like, it's been 22 years. It's not going to happen every year. And I feel like that pressure, the more and more goes on, and even you think about Messi with the Maradona comparisons, and it's been 40 years since they won the World Cup and all of that. That's a lot for an individual, especially the star players of some of these nations. And I genuinely wonder how much pressure that can potentially take. Does that lead to potential dread when going to your national team? I would hope not, because there has to be an immense sense of pride.
You just gave a good example of someone who mm-hmm. had that pressure on him. I mean, Messi did retire very briefly from the national team after mm-hmm. losing in the Copa America, right? So that pressure, again, like you said, for like select nations, right? But that exists 100%. I totally agree.
Yeah. But anyway, that was one other point that I just wanted to make about the psychology of competition, if you will. Go ahead.
I was just gonna say, yeah, and it can have the opposite effect sometimes too. Because going back to the U.S. Men's team, the amount of times, there's almost always at least one player on the U.S. national team, at least recently, that has this issue. But previously, it was Pulisic, who's having difficult time at Chelsea. But yet, when he came and played for the men's the U.S. It was, his spirit seemed different. We already said, like, he played better, but also just his general disposition of how he felt around the national team, or else how he portrayed his feelings when playing for the national team, was different. I think the example that we see now is probably like Gio Reyna, who had a great 2 games this past break, and yet made a terrible decision in terms of where going on loan. I'm almost positive that they are just doing a solid for Jorge Mendes, who's I'll just put it this way: Jorge Mendes' first client is the coach of Nottingham Forest. It's pretty easy to see what happened there with that loan. Jorge Mendez is also Gian Reyna's agent, if anyone does not know that. Anyway.
You're really spelling it out for them.
He's one example, current example of a player who goes away to play for the national team and just seems like either the pressure's off or just general disposition is much better. I think you could have said the same thing about Paul Pogba too in those years with Manchester United and whenever he would go to play for France. So I think it can happen in both directions.
I never really thought about that way. That's a really, really good point. And you mentioned something that was interesting to me, more so about when you said different directions, just because this is just a more like human point that I want to make. So let me put it to you this way. I just want to this is a very random example, but Rodrigo de Paul, Argentina, you know, national team, plays for Atletico Madrid, midfielder, we all know that. Atletico Madrid played, I believe it was Barcelona before the break, and lost 3-0. And that I believe was 10 days ago as of time of recording. Then the Argentine national team, hopped on a plane to go to Philadelphia and played in Philadelphia against, I believe it was El Salvador. I might be wrong, but I believe it was El Salvador. Then they hopped on a plane to go to Los Angeles to play Costa Rica last night. That is 3 games in the span of 9 days with I might butcher this with daylight savings, but with a 10-hour or potentially 9-hour time difference. That is a lot of hours between cities, and I want everyone listening to this to just think for a second, the last time that they went across 10 time zones to then run like 8 miles and do it all in 10 days or 9 days and do it 3 times. That is incredibly demanding on your body. And club schedules generally offer a little bit more in terms of breaks, in terms of maybe a 3-day break here or whatever it is, and less travel compared to international windows. Mm-hmm. So when you go and travel in the way that I just described for your national team, it can be extremely stressful on the body. And you're already midway through a season, which FIFA, UEFA, and all the cup competitions are just adding games repetitively, season over season, seemingly. That fatigue can also impact performance, like a lot. So I wanted to call that out too, because I'm just thinking of the people that might be listening to this that have gone from like London to New York or New York to London and been like, oh, I'm a little jet lagged. It might take me a couple days to, recover. Like, these guys don't have that opportunity. It's like, get off a plane, you train for a day, maybe two, and then you play. And then you go back. That's a lot.
That's insane. Yeah. I have a couple more things, but this kind of goes back to the a bit more of like the play style of where like some of the differences occur. I think that what you also see in an international level is, again, thinking about that lack of time for a sophisticated organization, right? A lot of that leads to more space in these international games, right? Like, the games become a bit more of like a rock fight, and it's pretty rare that you see a team have like as much control, even the top teams, even the very, very top four or five international teams in the world. Like, you very rarely see the same type of dominance and control over the flow of a game as you would see at club level from like a Manchester City, an Arsenal, a Real Madrid, those types of very top teams. So what happens is like there's a bit more of like a basketball feeling to at the international level. And what that does is allow players who might be like fantastic passers, let's say, as an example, like going back to Pogba again, fantastic passer at club and international level, but you give him the space, the more space that usually comes with international soccer, and the passing compilation that you could put up of him just for France is like unbelievable. Like
it's insane.
He's like, he's in that top echelon of examples here, but I think that you could kind of point this out at players at a lot of different levels. The game becomes more reliant on like 1v1 battles, right? There's not a lot of, there's less of teams that are just like fantastic at pressing, like team pressing, right? The only real example I can think of recently was Japan in the World Cup. They were very good, like, and not just in the World Cup, but you know, the last few years, right? They've been, like you just said, phenomenal, especially at like high pressing and organized pressing as a team, right? But even they're like an outlier, and I think some of that might even be have something to do with like the development system in Japan, where players will pretty regularly also play for like high school and college teams before going pro. But the game becomes a bit more like, not quite five-a-side, but it becomes a bit more like that at international level, because you don't have the defined roles as much. And it's just, it's a lot more rare that teams are not relying more on just winning 1v1 battles.
I haven't really given thought, to be honest, to the idea that teams are not relying on those 1v1 battles, which is, I feel like what you were saying, right? You weren't saying the mm-hmm. opposite. Yeah. I don't know when that trend started to occur, but I have to think that there is a strong correlation between like the peak Spain years, like you were talking about earlier, to now, and that level of high press being built into the game. Because prior to that, at least to my knowledge, as I've watched soccer for many, many years now, but not as long as some people, that was never a priority for managers, right? It was always about defensive structure. It wasn't about, as we've talked about a little bit in the podcast, it was not always about defense through offense, right? As you kind of alluded to. I have to assume that that's been a more 10 to 15 year, last 10 to 15 year type change. But I also think it's done one other thing, which has a knock-on effect on anything, everything else, which is increase the rate of speed of play. And that isn't necessarily a difference between club and country. I think this is pretty universal throughout the game now. But I think what that does is very directly, and the statistics show this, directly shows that players are running more throughout games. And there was a very spirited debate all over Twitter about whether Antoine Griezmann this week is a very hardworking player. In my opinion, he's arguably one of the hardest working players in the world for his position. But I don't think that the amount that you run is necessarily the exact metric of what defines a hard, quote unquote, hard worker. So that is just to say, I do think that the press is more collective throughout a team. I do think that at a national team level, I do think that that requires more talented and more physical players and runners to do. And I think that's led to more ground being covered as the game continues to get progressively better from a sports medicine standpoint as well. I think the final point that I'll make on this is that all leads to, I think, a higher quality of opposition. And I think that there are a lot of teams at a lot of players at a club level that might be used to consistently dominant performances against quote unquote lesser competition. You think of basically any of the top five kind of teams or clubs in Europe, but at a national team level, everything becomes a little bit more even. I think the average level of competition is higher across a national team level. So that's also another reason why a player might thrive against, you know, weaker club sides, for example, and then not be as effective against not even what we'd call quote unquote top tier nations.
Yeah, there's more, I'm kind of alluding to it, more parity, right? Because you can't just, you as the best player on like Bayern might not necessarily like be surrounded by amazing players when you go and play for club level, right? Or national level, right?
For a national team, yep.
Yeah.
David Alaba is a good example of that from Bayern.
Yeah, I mean, Lewandowski as well, right?
Yeah.
I think that's a great point. Last point for me, and kind of ends where we started, is around the coaching, right? There's a limited availability of high quality coaching at the national team level, right?
If I had an emoji I could react with, I would be clapping.
I mean, who knows? On the Riverside here, it might actually just show up if you do it.
No, I just got this thumbs up emoji thing. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. Oh man, yeah. But the limited coaching quality, mainly due, I think, to financial compensation. Look this up. At the last World Cup, the median salary of the coaches for the 32 teams that were at the tournament was about £1 million. Yes, a lot of money for most of us. But median salary of the current Premier League managers is four times that. So just to kind of,
oh my God.
Yeah, like that's where you end up with a lot of even the top national teams not having necessarily the best coaches in the world, right? Mm-hmm. Look, Germany's kind of lucked into it with Julian Nagelsmann. I think this is a different topic for another day, but I think that plus them being the host country during the Euros this summer, I think that they're, I'll just say dark. As much as Germany could be a dark horse in any tournament, to be honest,
for the last two major tournaments, they have not really showed up. True. So
yeah,
I get where you're coming from.
Yeah, but again, it's very rare that you have a coach who's had that sort, who's had success to the level that Nagelsmann had in club level, become a national team coach. Right. And I think to bring this back to the U.S. men's national team again, a federation that also probably can't pay even the best, whoever's the best paid national team coach in the world right now, probably could not even pay that salary. Yeah. The limits there is that you can end up with, Greg Berhalter, right? Who is a perfectly,
I don't know why, average... that felt personal. just the way it was more about the way you said it more than anything else.
But I'm saying he's like the median level coach at international level. And maybe he might even be slightly above that, but on the global level, quite average, right? But when we're talking about international coaches, with all due respect, Gareth Southgate is not like England, who can pay a lot more for their coach's salary than the U.S. could for ours. Gareth Southgate is not someone who has like unbelievable track, has this like even good, let's say, track record prior to becoming the English national team coach. So,
yeah,
it limits, it can also limit how good a player looks at national team level, right? Especially if maybe they're being relied on more than they should be by the national team, or they're being played in a system that maybe doesn't necessarily accentuate their strengths, right? So that's probably the biggest reason why the level or the the game looks a little different at international level compared to club level. You know, the coaching is just simply not as good.
Wow, I never really thought about that. That's a really good point. I would argue, while I think that's correct, and I hear you on salaries and I hear you on coaches, because there are a number of coaches that have not done well at a club level and gone on to do really well in national team level, and vice versa. I think the one thing that I would caveat and say that is probably evened out in terms of quality of coaches based off of the fact that there's an averaging of player quality at a national team level as well. So it's not like there are that many national teams that say, oh, you know, we have just a ton of money, we'll just throw it at coaches and we'll have a great team. You just proved that Gareth Southgate is a good example why that can't necessarily be the case. But at the same time, teams can't necessarily say, oh, we have a transfer budget to pull in English players, right? So it's a bit of both.
I see. Yeah. Yeah. The coaches are constrained in their own way too. Yeah,
exactly. So, and agreed. That's kind of a big point that we made, is that if the coaches are constrained, then what can they do? Right. At mm-hmm. a certain point, you're picking from a pool of players that are just citizens of that country. You're stuck with that, whether you like it or not. And so I think that's part of why the national team role for any manager is pretty selfless. It has to be pretty selfless. Yeah, it's definitely not about the money, because I feel like Gareth Southgate could actually go and get a bag from somewhere. I don't know where.
I think actually in his case, he's getting, this is the bag. I don't think he would get paid more at club level.
I would slightly disagree for the aura.
Oh, really?
yes. Because a national team coach, an English national team coach going to coach a Premier League side, man, that's...
Maybe a decade ago.
You know what? Fair point.
More weight.
Yeah.
But considering the amount of non-English coaches there are in the Premier League right now, I don't know if it being English holds as much weight anymore.
That's fair. I'll concede that. I know when I can and cannot win an argument. But I mean, look, you brought up some really good points. I shared some of mine. I still think like the travel thing is crazy for the country. I think that's absolutely nuts. Anyway, any other points, Rion, that you want to make before we wrap up?
No, I think that's pretty much it. I think it all, like I said, this all kind of stems to just me reading just people's takes about the U.S. men's national team and the coaching stuff there, and ultimately me being like just shrugging and kind of being like, look, it's not worth my effort of trying to like defend Greg Berhalter like that hard, other than saying, you know, he's fine. And although he's not really going to influence the team, he can't influence the team that much. And you know, as I said, after the World Cup, what matters most for the US is that when these guys get better, and hopefully the younger generations also develop very well, and maybe this going forward, the team, the program itself can have like a good level of players to pick from going forward. Yeah, but no coach is coming in. Pep Guardiola is not coming in and making, he was great for at least one of the games, but not making Haji Wright into Erling Haaland, right? Like, so like, it's just,
that's pretty rude to Erling Haaland, but you know,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, honestly, yeah, that is rude to Haaland, because Pep has not really changed how he plays at all.
That's actually true.
but yeah, you know, the influence of the coach, especially at international level, it's so minimal, unless you have one of those Nagelsmann. And there's, again,
And he is going to get snatched up after the Euros. I'm just telling you that now. He will.
Yeah, that's probably more likely. That's probably the most likely thing to happen, right?
Very much so.
But yeah, that's pretty much it on the international stuff. We're back to club soccer this weekend, so
and then the Champions League after that.
Yeah, we've got for this weekend at least, we've got another game between one of the three teams up at the top of the Premier League. It's this one is Arsenal City
Arsenal.
Yeah,
and it's funny because there was a story or a quote, I forget, that came out of the England camp where Declan Rice basically went up to John Stones and was like, "Oh, big game this weekend." And John Stones was like, "Oh, who are you playing?" Which is just it's just incredible.
Oh man. That's great. Anyway. Good for him. He has a work-life balance for sure. It's really not paying attention outside of practice. Playing, yeah.
Oh my goodness. That's
too funny.
That was great. Well, anyway, ladies and gentlemen, thank you as always for listening. We'll be back in a little bit at some point to probably talking about the Champions League, why Barcelona will, knock on wood, potentially make it to the Champions League final. I'm not saying that, but you know, some people are.
It's totally on the table now, considering the bracket they're on. Any one of those four teams should feel like they have a good chance to make the final.
Yeah, I'm back in it, aren't I? Okay, all right. With that, thank you as always for listening, and we will speak with you all soon.
Thanks, guys.